Hello, my name is Mark Rohan, and you're listening to the Breffni Early Show.
Breffni, you come all the way from Ireland for this adventure.
Isn't Breffni Early a real tonic, full of positivity?
It's an amazing story, Breffni, with a wonderful, happy ending.
All of those things on your bucket list wouldn't necessarily have led you to do the World Cycle Race.
27 countries, 490 days. 18,000 miles on a bike.
You've decided that's it. You've got to keep giving yourself challenges.
And welcome back to the third episode of the Breffni Early Show, where each week we talk to somebody who is either interesting, inspirational, motivational, or all three. And this week is one of my favorite and most inspiring sports people from the last 5 or 6 years in an Irish jersey. I'm delighted to say, Mark Rohan, welcome to the show.
Definitely my pleasure.
A little bit about yourself, first of all. Most people will be familiar with you from your achievements on your hand bike in London in the Paralympics, but you've been to World Championships and you've collected gold medals at both World Championships and at Paralympics in both the road race and the time trial, and you're pretty much all conquering over that period of time in your career. We're not going to see you on the road in Rio because you have retired from the sport and you've moved on to other pastures, which we'll be getting into as well later in the show. But I want to go back a little bit. I want to go back to the early years of Mark Rohan, and I want to hear a bit about what you were like as a teenager growing up, because the world of Paralympic sport wasn't something that you would have expected in your teenage years.
No, as a teenager, I was more focused on just the usual kind of average guy who was playing football, chasing girls, dodging homework, and doing a bit of work at the weekends to get a few pounds to go out. So I'd say it was just the average country guy growing up anywhere in Ireland. So Gaelic football was my main sport. You know, I played it every day, and it was... I grew up in a village called Ballinahown, so there was always a good group of us. We're literally every single evening we had a group of 7, 8, 9 playing soccer or Gaelic or whatever. We went to the local school there, and then at weekends we'd play the same. And during the summers, it was just every single day was, you know, trying to imitate the guys from Italian 90 or watching the, you know, the international rules and cutting your sleeves up like Trevor Giles or...
Really, you had a Meath man. As a West Meath man, you're actually going to admit that Trevor Giles was a... was an icon in your world. Is that allowed?
Yeah, when it comes to recognising a good footballer, it doesn't really, doesn't matter what jersey he's wearing, but yeah, I really admired him, Geoff Fallon. I always liked watching centre forwards play, so I like those guys. They're pretty class, like, it was a class act. But I remember he had the jersey cut up, and that was just one thing that, you know, you try to emulate. He was one of the biggest names when I was growing up, yeah, for sure.
Who were your inspirations as a kid, other than Trevor Giles, maybe in the other sports you mentioned?
I remember being on holidays in Claverhead up in Louth when Michael Crooke won the gold medal. I remember being in Martins of Doon when Paddy Bonner saved that goal, saved the penalty against Romania. And I would say the soccer team. I remember being in Flins and Ballycumber when Ray Houghton scored against Italy. Like, you know, the last couple of minutes just waiting for the referee to blow the whistle in Giant Stadium. So I would say the Irish soccer team, Michael Carew. Paul McGrath is definitely one of my heroes, for sure.
Yeah, no, he is fairly inspirational. I was a little bit closer to that game in Italian 90, or in USA 94. I was actually about a mile from Giant Stadium. I had to sell my ticket because my dad couldn't get a second ticket. How bad was that? It was an absolute disaster at the time. So I actually missed out in that game. It was the one game of those championships I didn't get to. I want to talk about what happened for you next. So you're 20 years of age. You're playing football with the local team. You're in and out of the county squad under 21. And you're probably more in than out. And football and sport and just being an average 20-year-old lad was your life. And then one day, everything stopped.
I wouldn't say it stopped, no, it just changed. So in November of 2001, I had a motorcycle accident and crashed off the bike, and I hit a tree, and it broke, you know, broke my back and damaged my spinal cord. So I spent the next 7 months in hospital rehabbing. So Yeah, everything changed. My work, I was working as an apprentice electrician with the ESB. So that was pretty physical, you know, climbing poles, putting power into houses, learning how to wire houses. Very physical job, but I loved it. Because you were out and about every day, you had a different office every day. And then the whole sporting scene was revolved around Castledaly. Soccer with Badenahown. And then the county, I was pushing towards the county. I played with the under-21s the year before, and I was hopefully going to make it through to the senior team. But yeah, that all changed, so I just had to refocus. It took me a couple of years just to get back into the gist of things, get back to work, and then kind of find out what kind of path I wanted to take and what was available to me. You know, when you talk about the GA and, you know, a local kind of community in a small village, you know, the people around me were absolutely amazing, you know, so I was never kind of struggling on my own.
The point of this podcast, Mark, is to maybe some of the listeners who maybe not as dramatic and as huge circumstances yourself, but they're faced with an obstacle or maybe something they can't see themselves getting past. And I want to understand what was going through your head in the, not immediately after the accident, because we can only imagine what that was. And I don't think anyone who hasn't experienced that really can get their head around that. But I'm talking maybe 6 or 8 months or 12 months down the line. Was sport even a factor in your head? Did you think you'd ever be involved in sport again?
First of all, you're trying to deal with your own kind of your own self-worth, your own existence. You know, what's life all about? What are you going to do now? You know, you spend a small bit of time wondering what you're going to miss out on. You no longer do this, or you know, you can't do what you used to do. But pretty soon you realize that's getting you absolutely nowhere. And it's just a lot of self-taught that kind of gets you there, because you know, people can tell you all these positive things, and it's just seeing people who've gone before you. You know, I remember meeting Garrett Cullerton, and even in the hospital there was guys coming in and out. So you'd seen that these guys were married, these guys were successful in sport, successful in business. So they had the exact same life as somebody without a wheelchair or somebody without a disability. So I suppose after kind of having a talk to myself and saying, okay, enough self-pity. It's time you actually did something with the rest of your life. Because when you come so close to past in a way, because I did come close to it, because I damaged my heart and punctured along and stuff. So you think, okay, well, tomorrow you could pass away, the next day. So you just try and make the most of it. You know, and I'm not saying that I said it every single day. Some days, even now, you get down and stuff. But you know that there's always, you've come from a worse position, and there's so many people out there. So I knew that sport had given me discipline, had given me enjoyment, had given me friends, had given me health. So I just wanted to get back into that. And I suppose one of the first things that got me back there was playing sport myself. But then I managed this. So I had an accident on the way to a soccer match. And the soccer team I was playing with at the time, I ended up managing them a year and a half later. And loved it. Loved the whole camaraderie. The exact same thing. Training. I know, I wasn't physically training. I loved it, you know. We had a good year. And like even when we meet up now, we still talk about that. But then I realized after that okay, I want to play myself. I was only 23 or 24. And a couple of months after, I was sitting in the office in the ESB, because I continued to work for the ESB. And I did an AutoCAD course, so I was kind of updating maps. But I just realized this wasn't for me, you know. I was getting money, but I wasn't happy. So I know that you've had the same talk to yourself where you say, okay, I need to do something about this. So I decided to go back and study. I hadn't been to college, but I had enjoyed the couple of months I had done through the apprenticeship. So I said, okay, I'll go back to college at 25. And yeah, you know, you always have those self-doubts. Are you clever enough? Because my leaving cert was a disaster. That was another kind of obstacle to overcome. With the self-doubt of being what people would see you. You know, because I was leaving Athlone. I know it's like, think of it now. You're leaving like a familiar circle, and you're going up to a whole new ball game up in Dublin. So it was great. It was one of the best things I've ever done, to go back and challenge myself from an academic point of view.
Where did you study?
I studied up in UCD, 3-year degree in sports management. Loved it. Did the 3-month placement in Melbourne as part of it. And really enjoyed it, yeah.
Okay, so off the court and off the bike, this is your career path that's progressing. But when does sport and you actually participating come back into the equation? At what age?
Straight away. I remember I was in the house, and we, you know, the parents' house is a bungalow, just the average country bungalow. I was doing laps of it around the footpath in the wheelchair, maybe a couple of weeks out of hospital. They bought me like a basketball ring at the back, so I'd be out there. I remember it was raining, you know, it was cold, but I'd still be practicing away. I had always been out there, you know, kicking football against the wall, breaking windows, doing the same thing. So just got out there, did the same thing in the wheelchair, played basketball, set up a club in Athlone, which is still going strong. The Marist, actually, the Marist College, where I played football with. The principal, was Tommy Blaine at the time, he gave us the use of the hall, which was amazing, because before that I was travelling to Dublin twice a week. So basketball was the next step, and I got into the Dublin team, and then eventually got into the Irish team. I went to European Championships in 2005. And that was when I really saw the benefit of sport for somebody with a disability, because you get to travel kind of in a group, and then you pick up tips and tricks from guys who've been in a wheelchair for a while. So just stuff like easy, like simple stuff like using the bathroom, showering, you know, all the little small things that if you're living in Ballinahan, you mightn't pick up. And all brilliant, absolutely brilliant. So that kind of really lit a fire.
We know you as a cyclist. When did you move from the team sports and the basketball into the solo pursuits again and back into the cycling?
Kem, in 2007, we hosted the European Championships. And I was on that team. I was the captain of the Irish team. And it didn't go to plan, you know. We didn't fulfill our potential, let's say. So after that, I put a lot of effort into it, and I thought, okay, I think I'll start. I was playing a bit of tennis with a friend, wheelchair tennis. So I just said I'd play that for the year. I gave up the basketball in 2008, played tennis. We were over a tournament in Nottingham, and there's a guy on a hand cycle. So I tried it out, cycled around a couple of courts, and loved it. I came back, and then Dennis Toomey, who is now the president of Cycling Ireland, he was using the bike for a demo, trying to encourage people into paracycling. And next thing I knew, I was ordering a bike from America online. It arrived one December evening, hopped on it, drove around the house, fell over, scratched the side of it, cut my elbow. Loved it ever since then, yeah.
The rest is kind of history, but we're going to delve into it a little bit. Talk us through the kind of the meteoric rise from falling off and scratching yourself to being on the podium at the Paralympic Games.
Yeah, I was training away, doing a bit, like nothing serious, nothing, you know, only a couple of times a week, nothing structured, no power meters, any of that stuff. And then I think it was the Irish Wheelchair Association and Cycling Ireland came together to get myself and a guy from Donegal called Carol Doherty. We went to World Championships in 2009 in Italy, and you know, we arrived with these bikes. The bikes were big lumps, they were like big gates, really. We weren't aerodynamic, you know. We had the very basics. We were in tracksuit bottoms. All these other guys were in speed suits. And I just saw the potential to develop there. It was massive. And spent that 3 or 4 days just going around, taking pictures of bikes, talking to as many people as I could, what their training was like. Because if you talk to an athlete, usually, they're pretty open about what they do, how they do it, what's the right thing to do, what's the wrong thing to do. So I just was a sponge there for that couple of days. And, you know, the president of Cycling Ireland was out there at the time, Phil Lee. He said, listen, we'll support you. So after that, I was just trained like a dog for a while. Went to the World 2010 and had won a race that year in Dubai and had medaled in Spain and Belgium. So I was in good shape. And the world just, I suppose, everything played into my hands. The time trial, I'd finished fifth. But most of my training was geared towards road racing at the time, so...
Did you go with the road race and a gold medal as the target? Would anything less have been a disappointment?
No, I never really had a target.
Really?
Yeah, honestly, I didn't know. you know, I had a couple of experiences with guys racing during the year, and I really wanted to beat a couple of them because they were total assholes, you know, for a new guy coming through. So that little bit of bite, you know, when you see a guy trying to drop you, and you at that time you actually hate his guts. So it was just like, okay, I don't care where I finish once I beat this guy. It's just like, you know, like the cornerback when he gets a belt, the corner forward, it brings it to the next level. So I was an Austrian guy actually, so I was just aiming to beat him. And I beat him, so it ended up that I beat him into second, so it was great.
We don't see this side of sport normally. We see everyone pretending to like each other, but when you're off the bikes or off the pitches or off the whatever sport you might be involved with, away from the sport, do the competitors tend to get on with each other, or is there that competitive edge all the time?
Yeah, there's only a couple of nations that would get on really with each other. The Irish guys, you would usually get on with the Brits, the Americans, the Dutch. But, you know, anyone who can... You know,
who can speak English effectively.
Drink, maybe, I know.
Elite athletes, Mark, elite athletes.
Yeah, but there is, of course, the friendships, you know, and even when I retired, I got lots of messages from guys who I'd raced against. But, you know, you have respect for them because, first of all, you respect the fact that they're doing what they're doing, they're competing, but... You know, some of them have amazing stories, you know, they've had tragic stories and amazing stories, so I would respect all of them for sure, but I think it's a healthy respect that, okay, I know this guy's going to be doing this certain amount of training, I don't want this guy to beat me, and that gives you an extra motivation, you know, when you're lying in bed and it's -1 outside and you're thinking, okay, I'm not going to train today, then you think, okay, that son of a bitch is going to be doing this or that, so it just keeps you going, and I'm sure, for sure, that that's... Boxers must get that the whole time, or the likes of McGregor lately. At high performance level, yeah, it's cutthroat, for sure.
It needs to be, though, right?
Well, like, and it always was with me. If I was going to the pitch, I know lads would always say, you know, you have to be willing to die on the pitch, you know. And if, you know that famous old saying, you know, go out there and give it 100%. But, you know, I was willing to do that. Absolutely bury myself and, you know, end up puking from training sessions and... Just, I was always able to push myself fairly hard. So it was just the same thing in cycling.
Going back, Mark, I'm thinking maybe if there's a listener who finds themselves in the situation that you found yourself in, maybe it's been an accident and there's been a life change, or maybe it's just dealing with something else. It might be a temporary issue, broken leg or broken arm or something like that, and somebody is struggling with the motivation to get out. What three tips can you give to get past that obstacle and get out and get active and get back involved in exercise or whatever the activity might be that the person's interested in?
Wow, I'm always very reluctant to give tips, but what worked for me, I don't know the ins and outs of, you know, of lots of different situations. But for me, it was, don't take yourself too seriously, you know. People think that you know, nowadays you have to do this, and there's lifestyle coaches telling you to eat this and think that, and there's so much shit talk nowadays. It's outrageous. Just don't take yourself too seriously, you know. Like, listen to your family would be one thing, and your friends. What else would I say? Just, yeah, don't, like, life is short. Life is short, so don't take it too seriously. You know, with all these things, if you're going to be doing everybody can't be this perfect person, you know. So maybe just relax. Don't take yourself too seriously. And surround yourself with good people.
Yeah, I think that's key for me as well. Who are the people that you surrounded yourself by? I know you mentioned Cycling Ireland, you mentioned Dennis Toomey and others. Who are the main people or organisations that were there for you to help you get to where you got in the sport?
Oh, wow, everybody. From Badenham Gun Club to ESB. ESB were a massive one because they gave me time and flexibility to kind of switch and swap to what I wanted to do. So I was very lucky, you know. I was working with a big organization. If somebody was self-employed, a carpenter or something, it's a totally different ballgame. You know, if they have family, I didn't have family. So my situation was I was very, very lucky, very, very fortunate to get the support. But Cycling Ireland were a big help. The Irish Sports Council were brilliant. Paralympics Ireland, Dara Sheridan with the Irish Sports Council, Liam Mongan is a great guy too. There's so many, you know. But with Cycling Ireland they were great support, and the funding from the government made a massive help, because it meant you could prepare the best possible way.
The funding aspect of things is talked about an awful lot, especially now when this cut's been made across the country. And I don't want to get too political or too in-depth into specifics, but in your opinion, is there enough money put in, or is it just maybe how it's spent? Or could athletes themselves be more efficient with the money that they're given, in your opinion?
Yeah, this is kind of a bone of contention with me, because a lot of the Irish athletes, okay, in Paralympics for sure, but I know that the Olympics, a lot of them are full-time training like devils, and they're not hitting the top 10. So I think the criteria has to be changed for sure, because you see guys, you see like Rob Heffernan, maybe Dervla O'Rourke. So they were competing. Maybe they finished fourth, and they were beaten by two Russian dopers, just say hypothetically. So their funding was halved. Therefore, the following year, they couldn't make the same commitments that the Russian guys were using. So for me, it's totally this system of top three get 40 grand, top six get a certain amount. I think they need to use the experience, coaching staff, independent observers to say, okay, this guy's got potential or this girl's got potential. We'll support them. And instead of just giving us, you know, the 40,000 or 30,000 or 20,000, put more supports in place. But for me, definitely, Irish athletes are very well supported. You know, they can't, I know, okay, you compare yourself to the Americans or whatever, but come on, we're an island of 5 million people, and we achieve way above our means. But like, that's the Irish way, I think. You know, you can't always be. I would personally always strive to do the best training and stuff, but you can't blame funding for it the whole time.
I'm not going to spend too much time talking about 2012, but for you personally, phenomenal month in London. You picked up 2 gold medals. What was that like?
It was great for me, of course. But it was, you spend a month with the Irish team at the time was brilliant. You know, you had Enda Smith and Colin Miller and Catherine Walsh and Fran Meehan and Damien Shaw and Brian Nugent and all these guys. You know, we'd spent a lot of time together and in the years trying to get there, and it was just really good to spend a month with those people, with people from different teams as well, where you never really spend time with them. So that was nice. And then the competition, you know, when everything goes to plan, which it rarely happens, it's nice, you know, especially with cycling, because God knows you can snap a chain, you could get a tire burst on you, something like could take you out. So it was just perfect, I have to say. And really, the one thing I'll always take from it is the effect the sport can have on people. Because there was maybe 50, maybe 60, 70, I don't know, people who I knew really well who were there, you know, who had come to my hospital bed and who helped raise money at the time of my accident and would bring it to a match or whatever. And to see those people have such fun, you know, have such enjoyment and such pride, that's the one thing that I'll never, ever forget.
I wasn't in Brands Hatch. I was in London at the time. I was in London for the weekend where the three lads won their 3 medals in the space of about an hour and a half. Dara, Michael, and then Jason in the 200 metres on the night. It was a phenomenal month for Irish sport. But one, importantly, from people involved in sport in this country, that it seemed to be the first time that a team went away with genuine expectation and then actually delivered on it. Everyone who was expected to medal did, plus a few others who maybe were outside bets. What was so special about that group across all the sports that the result was so fantastic over that couple of weeks?
I don't know if other teams, you know, lots of other teams went away and overachieved, but this team, well, I'd say for a start, being honest, you know, they saw themselves short for sure, saying we're aiming for 3 medals. But realistically, they knew that there was a good chance of 6 or 7. So, publicly, they probably sold themselves short a small bit. other than that, everybody just worked hard, I suppose. You know, there's a lot to be said for just for hard graft, hard training. I went away for months, you know, on my own in Portugal. Solitude, waking up some morning thinking, Jesus, you know, another 5-hour cycle on my own, back to a house on your own. But you're always just thinking, you're thinking of that final day, you know, 5 months away, 6 months away, of where you know people are going to be there. You want to do your best performance possible, and hopefully you get the results you deserve. So, and a lot of those guys, they were mature, you know. Jason had been there, Michael had been there, Dara had been there. Like I was 31 going into it, so I was mature. Just things went well, you know, and the team itself was, you know, we had spent a year previously, we'd gone to Portugal for a holding camp. It was just the support from all of the sponsors. I know that sounds cheesy, but you know, they made these camps possible. Everything just ran smoothly. And as an athlete, okay, I saw maybe 5% of the planning, preparation, the problems, you know, I saw nothing, but I'm old enough to realize I've been involved in sport long enough to know that most of the work is done behind the scenes. So all those guys that put the work in was amazing. And I think London did a great job.
Looking forward, obviously everyone's attention is now turned to this summer, 2016, and it's Rio for the Olympics, first of all, and then a month later, the Paralympics. Are you a little bit disappointed you won't be there, or was the retirement the right decision for you at the time?
The retirement was kind of, it was going to come after Rio anyway. I had that made up because, you know, you do get sick of it. Yeah, not, you know, it's great when you're doing it, but you realize that there's so many other things in life, you know, business, friends, relationships, all those things that you want to achieve and travel and see and enjoy. It's not possible when you're training at the highest level. So it was going to come anyway, but then so there's a classification in June. It was kind of taken out of my hands. And I think sometimes when something's taken out of your hands, it's nearly easier because there is no will I, won't I. You know, you know, the decision was made that I was changing classification, which meant I'd gone from the front five to the back five. And for me, okay, it's fine. And I might have been able to stay on and try and battle for a position on the Irish team, but I would just rather put my energy into something else. You know, and like looking at the state of the sport nowadays, like Rio, I know you say everyone's looking forward to Rio, but realistically, who is looking forward to Rio? When you see the state of athletics, the state of FIFA, the state of elite sport.
Are you disillusioned with the whole thing?
No, I'm not disillusioned with sport, no, because grassroots, it's amazing. You know, you go down, you watch an under-10 game, an under-14 game, a club game, it's brilliant. But like, even when I went back to back in Ireland for a couple of days during the summer, I got to see the Tyrone Monaghan match and something else in Croke Park. Mayo destroyed Donegal, and it wasn't great. You know, sport at the highest level, even when you see what's happening with Dublin sponsorships, the gap is becoming increasingly bigger. Even with the money in the Premiership, I'm becoming disillusioned with sport at the highest level, because now it's just. Even with McGregor, you know, I was enjoying the first couple of fights, but now it's just this media show. You know, it's not for me. It's not sport. It is sport, obviously, but you know, the real values of sport, you know, friendship, performance, dignity, participation, exactly, and that's what the Olympics were founded on. But nowadays, it couldn't be further from the truth. You know, so like the likes of Usain Bolt, if he was outside running, I'd have zero interest in that.
That is a nice little segue onto what you're doing now, because I'm speaking to you for the first time on the show. We've had someone who's actually physically not here with me while we're recording this. You're in Madrid and you're taking part in further academic studies. Tell us about the course you're doing in Madrid at the moment.
It's an MBA in sports management with University of Europe and a partnership with Real Madrid. It's a 9-month MBA. Pretty intense, but I have to say I'm loving it so far. I've been here for 2 months. The class I'm in, there's 40 of us, but there's two classes of 20, and there are people from every single corner of the world. So you're getting to learn different cultures. You're getting taught from some of the experts in Real Madrid. And it's just another way of learning, developing, opening your mind. And for me, it's brilliant because it's just, you know, you have something to do absolutely every single day. You're challenging yourself in the exact same ways. So I'm loving it, I have to say.
You're coming across, in the previous discussion we had there a minute ago, very opinionated about the future of Irish sport and sport in general. With the direction you've gone with your academic career down that line of sports management, do you see yourself playing a part in the management of sport in Ireland in the future?
I'd say more so in the development of sport. I have much more of an interest in working at grassroots, underage, than working at the elite level, at the high end, because you see the stress some of these guys are under. And for me, it's not a good life balance. So yeah, definitely, I would love to get into a development position. I kind of have it in my head that I go back to Ireland in a couple of years' time. But I think the opportunity now would be to go and travel to different parts of the world and, you know, learn from those guys and maybe go back in a couple of years' time and bring all the teachings back there.
Paint the picture for me. Will we be seeing you as a games development officer with the GAA, with an individual sport like cycling or maybe wheelchair basketball?
Honestly, Brefni, I just hope I'm happy. Whether it's working for Real Madrid or it's lying on a pitch in Bangalore, I don't really care. Once I'm happy, and I know that sounds very cheesy, but I would have loved to have spent a couple of years in America, in the college system. I would like to maybe do something in South America. Maybe Germany also, Australia, Asia, who knows?
You know, it's possible to go and cycle around the world. You could do that. I'm just throwing it out there.
I don't want saddles, so I think I'll leave that to
the crazy people. Yeah, the crazy people. Thanks. What are the two or three big things you've learned from everything you've done over the last few years in terms of your elite athlete preparation?
Make sure you enjoy what you're doing at the time you're doing it. Because, you know, you can set this goal 3 years' time, I want to try and win a gold medal. That's not realistic, really. You know, setting goals is great, but what you're doing at the moment, you know, is more important. And make sure you're enjoying it. Like, even here, when I have a deadline here for an assignment or a group project, you can kind of get wound up and nervous and you think, okay. But then you pretty quickly think about, okay, you have to enjoy what you're doing right now, because God knows what could happen tomorrow. So try and enjoy it. Because, like, for me, that was the best crack was the training camps, you know, acting the market with the team, you know, trips to Australia. Well, it wasn't necessarily London was the highlight of my cycling career. It was probably the training camps and the friendships. So the first thing would be to enjoy what you're doing and not focus on the goal. Second one would be to realize that, you know, a lot of people, when you're an athlete, you think everybody's going to be watching, everyone's going to tune in and everyone's watching. But realistically, you realize pretty quickly that nobody really cares that much about Paralympics or Olympics or soccer, you know, because there's a lot bigger things going on in the world. So, and just going back to the same point, try not to take yourself too seriously. And read lots of books. Read different... I usually read a lot of autobiographies or just something that's kind of outside the box. You know, and I always kind of think outside the box, whether it's your training or whether it's just, any shape or form of life, just try not to follow the herd, I'd say.
The final question, Mark, of this chat we're going to have today is, if the listeners of this podcast, if you could ask them one favor, what can they help you with?
Nothing, man. They've done enough. Everyone, as far as I'm concerned, I've drained enough people from the resources. So, just be happy. Be happy. Be grateful, I suppose, for what they have. That's a bit deep, but.
That's perfect. That's how we like it on this show. Mark Rowan, double world champion, double Paralympic champion in 2012 in hand cycling. Absolute pleasure to have your acquaintance for the last 40 minutes or so. Thank you so much, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you again in the future. Best luck with your new academic career, and whatever happens for you in the future, we wish you the very best of luck.
Definitely. Thanks a million. Yeah. And best of luck to yourself. And I'll be listening out for the other podcast to see how things are going and how things are taking shape in Ireland.
Look forward to it. Thanks a million, Mark.